first feel Chanel number 5. Got to be the finest girl alive. You walk real cool, bitches, everybody's eye. The cats are too nervous, they can't shake it high. She's not too skinny, she's not too fat. She's a real pump singer and I like a nice back. Devil with a super hat, super hat.
We do have a chat room that we use during the show, and you can find that by going to the webpage, click on the How to Listen link, and then you'll see how to get to the chat room. Simple. Just put your name in and pick the room called Satellite Chat.
Pretty woman, walking down the street, pretty woman, the kind I like to meet, pretty woman. I don't believe you, you're not the truth. No one could look as good as you.
Mercy.
Pretty woman, won't you pardon me, pretty woman? I couldn't help but see, pretty woman, that you look lovely as can be. Are you lonely just like me?
Wow.
Pretty woman, stop a while. Pretty woman, talk a while. Pretty woman, give your smile to me.
I guess I'll go on home. It's late. There'll be tomorrow night. But wait, what do I see? Is she walking back to me?
You're listening to the Dana Pretzer C-Band Talk Network. Monetary contributions are always welcome. If you would like to contribute to the network, please contact Dana Pretzer at pretzer@canada.com. And thank you.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you. I love you.
And that's Frank and Nancy Sinatra here on C-Band Talk, Sunday Night Satellite, at the top of the hour tonight, from the Jessica Marie Lunsford Foundation, Mark Lunsford. We'll talk about Jessica's Law and how things are going with that. And after that, we will have Fox News contributor Wendy Murphy on the show to talk about, we'll talk about Jessica's Law, and in particular about a recent decision out of Burlington, Vermont, from a judge by the name of Edward Cashman. I think you might be interested in hearing about that. It's as bizarre as you're going to get. At least I think so, and somehow I think you'll think so too.
Return to me, oh my dear, I'm so lonely. hurry back, oh my love, hurry back, I am yours. Return to me, for my heart wants you only. Hurry home, hurry home, won't you please hurry home to my heart. My darling, if I hurt you, I'm sorry. Forgive me, and please say you are mine. Return to me. Please come back, bella mia. Hurry back, hurry home to my arms, to my lips and my heart. Ritorna a me, cara mia, ti amo. Solo tu, solo tu, solo tu, solo tu, mio cuore.
And the late, great Dean Martin. This is C-Band Talk. I want to thank Keith LaMonica and the folks over, Bob Arnold and the other guys over at the W7DXX remote base for helping us out with some internet audio bandwidth. There's an Icecast stream now, courtesy of those folks. And if you want to check it out, just go to the webpage at www.cbandtalk.com. And right under the picture of the microphone, you'll see a link that says click here for a Icecast MP3 stream. And I've had a couple reports already that it's sounding pretty good. So appreciate that. Thank you, Keith. Your generosity is much appreciated because internet bandwidth is internet bandwidth, and you're donating it to a good cause, I think. In about 8 minutes, Sunday Night Satellite tonight, Mark Lunsford, first half, and second part, Wendy Murphy, here on C-Band Talk.
There's a lot of people say that America gets to fall. But speaking just for me and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. Now this lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. If our enemies don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We gonna put our feet back on the path of righteousness and live. God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America's teaching, you never did think that we'd ever get together again. Well, we dang sure fools, and we're walking real proud, and we're talking real loud again. Here in America, you never did think that it ever would happen again. From the sound up in Long Island, out to San Francisco Bay, and everything that's in between them is our home. Now we may have done just a little bit of fighting amongst ourselves, but y'all outside people best leave us alone. Cause we'll all stick together, and you take that to the bank. That's the cowboys and the hippies, and the rebels and the Yanks. You just go and lay your hand on the Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and I think you're gonna finally understand. And you never did think that it ever would happen again.
in the very good teaching. You never did think that we'd ever get together again. When we died, show too, you were walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. Here in the very good, you never did think that it ever would happen again. In the very good teaching, you never did think that we'd ever get together again. When we dang show food, and we're walking real proud, and we're talking real loud again. Here in America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
And that's the Charlie Daniels Band with In America. 5 minutes, Sunday Night Satellite here on C-Band Talk. If you want to check out the webpage, www.cbandtalk.com, www.cbandtalk.com. Right on the bottom of the page, we can check out any of the links at the top, schedule, guests, mailing lists, archives, how to listen, other links of people who support the program. Right under the microphone, you'll see the webcam and all the different ways to listen on the internet. We have a new way. We've got the media player stream courtesy of the folks of the On Computers Radio Show. We now have an IceCast stream thanks to Keith and the guys over at the W7DXX remote base. And right above that is a 16K Winamp stream. And any of those that work for you, they work for me because I am glad to have you here as a listener.
Well, all my friends are bopping the blues, it must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the doctor told me, boy, you don't need no pill. Yeah, that doctor told me, son, you don't need no pill. Just a handful of niggles and jukebox to cure your ill. Well, I talk to my friends about bopping the blues, and it must be going round. All them cats are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the cat bit me, man, I don't feel no pain. Yeah, jitterbug caught me, man, I don't feel no pain. I still love you, baby, but I'll never be the same. Yeah. All them cats bopping the blues, it must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, I must be rhythm bound. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues, baby. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rhythm and blues, it must be going round.
Okay, welcome. It's January 8th, 2006. How many of you have been writing 2005 still on your checks? I don't want to write that on a ticket. Some guy might get away with it. This is Sunday Night Satellite here on C-Band Talk. We're located at AMC 3, Transponder 5, 6.8 narrowband audio, virtual channel W3956 on the 4D TV receiver, on the internet at www.cbandtalk.com. That's www.cbandtalk.com. Just click on the internet links right under the microphone, and that's how you can listen to any of the streams that we've got, courtesy of the On Computers radio show and the guys over at W7DXX Remote Base. In a minute, Mark Lunsford from the Jessica Marie Lunsford Foundation. In the second part of the show, Fox News contributor, law professor Wendy Murphy will be here. Hope you can sit back and enjoy Sunday Night Satellite.
People can stand up and say they had enough of rock and roll music today. If you didn't come to boogie, you didn't come to ball, you got no business being here at all. Well, it's gonna be one of those nights. It's got to be one of those nights. Hey, people, I'm gonna give you warning. We're all going to jail in the morning. Grab somebody and hold on tight. It's gonna be one of those nights. Well, we just blew in for one night stand. Everybody here's gonna have a good time. Well, it's gonna be one of those nights. It's got to be one.
Okay, we've got a short delay here. I'm having some phone problems connecting with Mark Lunsford, so just bear with me, and we'll be back with my guests this evening on Sunday Night Satellite just as quick as I can.
The United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the world. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Well, who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent Britain and Italy, were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. And I was there. I saw that. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it's the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pump billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. And now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. Now, I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on now, you, let's hear it. Does any country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you find men on the moon not once but several times and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They're right here on our streets in Toronto. Most of them, unless they're breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend up here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said to hell with the rest of the world? Let somebody else buy the bonds. Let somebody else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France and Germany and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both of them are still broke. I can name to you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name to me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I'm one Canadian who is damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high, and when they do, they're entitled to thumb their noses at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these. But there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans this morning that it was broke. This year's disasters, with the year less than half over, has taken it all, and nobody, but nobody, has helped.
And that's the late Gordon Sinclair from, oh, I don't know, about 72, 73, talking about the Americans. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Sunday Night Satellite. I'm having phone problems or connection problems with Mark Lunsford, and we'll try and work those out. We may not be able to have Mark on for the first part of the show. As if I can get him, he'll be on right away. If not, at the bottom of the hour, law professor and Fox News contributor Wendy Murphy will be here to talk about, well, I'm going to read you a news article that I have here, and we're going to talk about this guy. And if there's an expert to talk about this issue, Wendy Murphy is that expert. This comes from Burlington, Vermont, Channel 3 News, WCAX-TV. Vermont Judge Edward Cashman is coming under fire for handing out a light sentence to a child rapist. Now get a hold of this. The judge says he did it because he no longer believes in punishment and he wants to speed the rapist's entry into a rehabilitation program. Now, I'm not kidding. This is what he said. I'll repeat it. The judge says he did it because he no longer believes in punishment, and he wants to speed the rapist's entry into a rehabilitation program. We're talking about a judge, assuming this article is correct, that says he doesn't believe in punishment. It's so sick, it's funny. Judge Cashman's short sentence for an admitted child molester triggered immediate public and political reaction, with some lawmakers saying that he should leave the bench. Judge Edward Cashman's life sentence was the talk of the town Wednesday. He sentenced child rapist Mark Hewlett to 60 days in jail. Hewlett admitted he raped a little girl countless times when she was between 7 and 10 years of age. Prosecutors say Hewlett deserved at least 8 years in prison as part of his punishment. But Judge Cashman said a 60-day sentence guaranteed that Hewlett would get into a sex offender rehabilitation quickly or face a possible life sentence. He said he had no choice because the correction department classified Hewlett as a low-risk offender, meaning that he can't get treatment until he's out of jail. And more important, the judge announced that after 25 years on the bench, he no longer believes in punishment. Almost everyone we spoke to in Burlington on Thursday had heard about the case, but we found no one who liked it. In quotation marks here, we were actually talking about it at work this morning. It just does not seem as justice was done. Seems like a real serious crime with pretty small consequences, said Joan Robertson of Burlington. I was dismayed to see someone who had committed such a serious crime against a young child would be given less of a prison sentence than for an instance of someone who got a second-term DWI, said Paul Poss of South Burlington. And the article goes on and on. Here you got a judge, okay? Here you got a judge that sentenced a child sex offender to 60 days in jail because he doesn't believe in punishment anymore. After 25 years on the judge, he doesn't believe in punishment. Now, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm sure Wendy Murphy will have lots to say about it, and she'll be my guest at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a break. We'll be right back here on Sunday Night Satellite.
Glory, hallelujah, I shall not be moved. Anchored in Jehovah, I shall not be moved, just like a tree that's planted by the waters. I shall not be moved. In His love abiding, I shall not be moved. And in Him confiding, I shall not be moved, just like the tree that's planted by the water. I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. Just like the tree that's planted by the waters. I shall not be moved. Though all hell assail me, I shall not be moved. Jesus will not fail me, I shall not be moved. Just like the tree that's planted by the water, I shall not be moved. Though the tempest rages, I shall not be moved. On the rock of ages, I shall not be moved, just like the tree that's planted by the water. I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved, just like the tree that's planted by the water. I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. Just like the tree that's planted by the water, I shall not be moved.
And that's the late, great Johnny Cash. I hope you've all had a chance to see that movie, Walk the Line. It's a good one, and if Joaquin Phoenix isn't considered for an Academy Award after that performance, I don't know who would. Because, you know, a lot of the movies that are out today are, well, they're different. They're different. If the Hollywood elitists aren't trying to put a message out there, I don't know what else they would be doing, because there's a lot of strange movies. Strange movies. Got an email from Joe, 75 today. I wonder if he means that's his birthday. If it is, happy birthday, Joe. You and Elvis have the same birthday. Elvis would have been 71, Joe is 75. Very good audio and selections through the W7DXX feed via computer at Arab, Alabama. And that's nice to hear from Joe. And if it's the temperature and not your age, I do apologize. Now, we're trying to get a hold of Mark Lunsford. He had agreed to come on the show for the first part tonight to talk about the Jessica Marie Lunsford Foundation. And I'm not getting anything when I try to contact him. It's a bad phone line down there, or what it is, I don't know. But one thing I do know is that Wendy Murphy, Fox News contributor, will be here in about 10 minutes. And we're going to talk about, well, we'll talk about Jessica's Law. Plus, we're going to talk about this Judge Cashman. And his ruling and his sentencing of a child sex offender to 60 days in jail because the judge doesn't believe in punishment anymore. Now, are we in big trouble in this day and age when we have judges that don't believe in punishment? Now, this is an article I'm reading, and maybe that's a misquote. Okay, I'll give them that. But if it's true, my God, are we in trouble.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wait upon a star, a dream of you. Fate is kind, she brings to those who love the sweet fulfillment of a secret love. Like a bolt out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. When you wait upon a star, your dreams come true.
This is Sunday Night Satellite. In about 7 minutes, Wendy Murphy, Fox News contributor and law professor, will be here to talk about this goofy judge. I'm going to dedicate this to one of the guys in the chat room. Why? Well, he created it.
Dear DirecTV, this morning I turned on the telly and all I can say is...
Oh, no! Oh, God!
Thank you again. Sincerely, Al Glover.
And cut.
How was that? Was that too over the top?
No, it was perfect.
An actual letter. Someone wrote it.
I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? If a tinker were my trade, would you still find me carrying the pots I made, following behind me? Save my love through loneliness, save my love for sorrow. I've given you my onlyness, come and give me your tomorrow. If I work my hands in wood, would you still love me? Answer me, baby, yes I would. I'll put you above me. If I were a miller, at a mill wheel grinding, would you miss your color box, your soft shoes shining? If I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? Would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby?
And we're back, Sunday Night Satellite. Wendy Murphy will be here in about 4 minutes. And we're going to talk about this judge, Edward Cashman. He's from Vermont. This comes from Burlington Channel 3 News, WCAX. And we're talking about his sentencing of a child sex offender to 60 days jail. Why? Well, the judge says that he did it because he no longer believes in punishment. You know, I don't know. It's so sick, it's comical. It's comical, and I'm sure Wendy will have lots to say about it. And she'll be right up here on Sunday Night Satellite on C-Band Talk. C-Band Talk is located at AMC 3, Transponder 5, 6.8 Narrowband Audio, W3956, Virtual Channel on the 4D TV, and on the Internet at www.cbandtalk.com, www.cbandtalk.com. We're also on cable down in Alabama. I don't know if they got a banjo on my knee down there or not, but thanks to those folks, too.
Amber waves of grain, my purple mind.
Okay, we're back. This is Sunday Night Satellite. I'm pleased to have on as my guest Fox News contributor, legal analyst, law professor, and all-around nice lady, Wendy Murphy. She's on the show tonight. Wendy, how are you?
I'm great. Good to be here.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about Judge Edward Cashman. I think you know who I'm talking about. Has this guy lost his mind or what?
Well, you'd have to ask him. I do think that it's interesting. People have been saying that he used to be tough and something happened and now he has a kind of a different philosophy about punishment.
Can I read you a quote that I have here?
Yes.
I shouldn't say quote, but this comes from the WCAX Burlington, Vermont News. The judge says he did it. I was talking about this earlier on in the show. He handed out a 60-day sentence to a child sex offender. The judge said he did it because he no longer believes in punishment, and he wants to speed the rapist's entry into a rehabilitation program. Now, is there any way on earth that we can be fair to this judge, or is he just gone off the deep end?
Well, let me say this. I mean, I think he should be off the bench. It's unacceptable to, in a sense, express one's own political philosophy about non-punishment being the approach to dealing with serious crime. In other words, it's fine to think that that's the most important factor, but to say that he doesn't think punishment is appropriate, look, I have news for him. Punishment, deterrence, these are all valid, necessary underlying theories behind why we prosecute people. He can't just on his own create his own legal system. So I do want to be fair to him in the sense that if he's had some kind of epiphany for whatever reason, that's his business, but he should not be sitting on criminal cases. And I think that's ultimately got to be the resolution here. You know, they're appointed judges in Vermont, not elected, so that it's not like the voters can really speak to it. But he does have to be reapproved. I don't know what the technical word is. He has to be reapproved at some point, and maybe because the legislature gets to make the decision, maybe as a matter of democracy, he won't sit for much longer. But it's pretty disturbing to hear a judge announce that he's had some kind of epiphany and then to see him express it from the bench on such a serious case. I think it's fine if he wants to, you know, become a priest. I mean, I don't care what he does in his personal life, but he has a responsibility as a professional and a responsibility to the system and to the public not to act on one very radical view of how the system should work, because it's wrong.
There's one comment here in this press release I'm looking at, Wendy, that says that this sentence is less than what a second-term DWI conviction would bring about. Now, when we were on the show before, when you were on my show before, we were talking about mandatory minimum sentences, in particular Jessica's Law and the work that you've been doing with Bill O'Reilly and the O'Reilly Factor. Can you update us on that and us know where you're at?
I hope your listeners will tune in this week. I know I'm going to be doing some work with him. We're going to be doing some work on some issues this week that will, I'm sure, address this guy in particular. But you know, this kind of case underscores the reason why Bill and I are urging states to adopt mandatory minimum punishments. It's that when you give judges discretion and they go off the deep end, as this guy did, they're allowed to exercise the discretion in a way that is unconscionable. Mandatory minimum sentences protect the public against this kind of crazy result. We've had some success. I have to say that every time I'm on the show, I don't know what the show gets for email, but every time I'm on the show, I get tons of email from people saying, this is what's going on in our state. Now that we've heard what you're doing, we're trying to push initiatives in our state, and here's an outrageous case that you should know about. And so I think that the critical mass is here. At least if I judge it by my experience, the numbers appear to be growing in terms of public support for mandatory minimums. And reasonable people can disagree about whether 25 years is too much or too small. I'll tell you, when I think about what we're asking for, when you say 25-year mandatory minimum, some people say, my goodness, that sounds so high. And it is high compared to the barbaric way we've been treating children for the past 100 years in the criminal justice system, which is to say we treat violence, especially sexual violence against them, as if it's akin to spitting on a sidewalk.
Yeah.
So compared to what we've been doing 25 years, sounds like a huge leap. But if you think about it just as a moral question, how much punishment is appropriate for an adult who rapes a child under the age of 12? Any reasonable person would have to be out of their mind not to think that 25 years is reasonable, because that life of that child is destroyed forever.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt. And again, referring back to this Cashman character, the rapist Mark Hewlett admitted that he raped the girl countless times when she was between 7 and 10 years of age. Prosecutors say that Hewlett deserved at least 8 years in prison, which is low. That's my part of that, as part of the punishment. Now, what's the recourse here as far as...
Yeah,
the
and can I just say one thing on that? Because
sure.
I think the public has to understand. It's one thing if this guy raped her once, and then to talk about 8 years being an appropriate sentence
yep.
for even a single sexual assault. When you say it was countless, that's buzzword for probably, you know, 50 times or more, because I've been in a position as a prosecutor of having to figure out how many charges to bring when I've had an ongoing situation. And the way the law works, every time you penetrate a child sexually, that's a crime. So technically speaking, even under the existing rules, it seems to me this guy, if he was worthy of, if he should have gotten 8 years for one rape, then I guess he should get life behind bars, given the numbers of times he assaulted this child. And even the prosecutor recommending only 8 years,
yeah.
You know, seems just so insulting to the integrity of this child's life. So 25-year mandatory minimum sentences, which is what we're pushing on the factor. Bill O'Reilly's been saying it long before anybody else, and now people are starting to get on board, and it's great. I mean, I do think he's creating a bit of a movement. It's not too much to ask. For a case like this, 25 years seems almost inadequate, and this judge says, I'd like to stop thinking about punishment and start to think about rehabilitation. Well, you know that these people, these types of predatory offenders who repeat again and again and again, repeat their acts, they're not fixable. I'm not saying that all offenders are the same,
right.
And I would never say that, but this is the type of person who is not fixable, so why would this judge be saying, I'd like to think about rehabilitation? It's almost as if he doesn't understand the nature of the crime, which is, again, a strong argument in favor of taking him off the bench altogether, or at least putting him on, you know, probate cases or, you know, I don't know, land court or something where he can't hurt the integrity of the human condition.
Yeah, exactly. But it's more to that, though, Wendy. It's, like you mentioned, it's a prosecutorial issue, too. When the prosecutor thinks 8 years is satisfactory for repeated rape, then we got a problem too. What can we do about that?
Well, that's actually a very fixable problem, and it's one of the reform initiatives I teach when I lecture around the country on this topic. I say to the voters, why aren't you paying attention to who your elected prosecutor is, and why aren't you voting based on the policy initiatives you care about? For example, instead of voting for the district attorney or the prosecutor that has the most face time on the nightly news, how about saying to the prosecutor at re-election time, what is your record on child abuse? And what is your, give me all your data. Don't just tell me you win all your cases, because some prosecutors would call this case a win, right? The guy pleaded guilty, he got probation. There are prosecutors who would say this was a victory because it was a conviction. So the public has to get smart and not say, oh, well, he has a 95% win rate on child sex cases. They have to say, tell me how many cases came to your attention, how many you declined to prosecute, and what happened to the ones you went forward with. If everybody's getting bargain basement sentences because you're not treating violence against children seriously enough, then you don't deserve my vote. But the reason prosecutors continue to get away with making silly recommendations and not having the right message sent is because the voters aren't holding them responsible. And it's our fault.
Exactly. And you're going to be on the factor this week, you said?
I'm going to be on this week, potentially tomorrow night. You know, these things are always affected by breaking news. But
yep.
Potentially tomorrow night. So I hope your listeners will listen in and watch and respond. I mean, one of the things that really makes a difference is when the public reacts and actually becomes active as a result of programs like The Factor. It's one thing for us to go on and scream and yell, but the public has to get up off their rockers,
yep,
and get out there and do something. We have,
yep,
to politically mobilize around the election of prosecutors. We have to politically mobilize around bad judges. And if nothing else, shame this judge. Just shame him right off the bench, because it matters. What the public thinks about a judge's sentence is a fair consideration. And from a political point of view, if the people in his jurisdiction don't become outraged and protest and scream and yell and write letters, then they deserve what they get.
Now, one of the last comments on this news article is that several defense lawyers told Channel 3 that they thought the judge's decision was fair. Now,
well, I'm sure the rapist thought it was real fair, too.
Yeah,
he
was probably doing the happy dance. Now, a defense lawyer has a role, and I have respect for defense lawyers because it's the system that we have, and it's the best system that we work with right now. But where do defense lawyers get off on something like this? Or how do they justify making comments like that?
Well, I don't know. You know, our system is fundamentally about winning. It is not about getting at the truth. It's about winning.
Right.
And if you're a defense attorney and your job number one is to win, then you can make even crazy arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Because the goal has nothing to do with justice from a societal perspective, and the agenda is not focused on the well-being of the child. A win is a win. And if you can't get an acquittal, your next best win is a very low sentence. The defense attorneys who see the world that way do celebrate. And if you respect the way our system works, then I guess you can honor and respect the fact that defense attorneys say such crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, I'm not sure our system deserves the kind of respect it sometimes gets. I am kind of tired of hearing people say, well, the American justice system, it may not be perfect, but it's the best one on the planet.
Right.
No, it really isn't. It actually isn't. And as a member of the system, the reason I say that is because it indulges the sorts of tactics that are fundamentally harmful to the greater good, all to the because we think that the most important thing is this one individual's freedom. For example, you know, the exploitation of racism in the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
There are a lot of people who said, well, that's what a defense attorney has to do, play any card you can, legitimately or illegitimately, as long as you win. Well, no, I don't think that a legitimate, civilized justice system should indulge the perpetuation of racism to save one man's liberty. It's just too great a cost for the public to bear. So I see that same kind of argument play out here. Just because a defense attorney can make a crazy argument or lie with impunity or, you know, and the list goes on and on about the crazy things they do, and they get away with it, the fact that they can get away with it doesn't mean they should, and I think the time has come for the American justice system to come up with some pretty dramatic shifts in thinking, because the public is really angry, and the public is cynical, and when the public becomes cynical, it no longer cares about the rule of law, and then we stop caring about each other, and then we start treating each other with incivility, and, you know, it's chaos.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we are. We're at the beginning of the end. And I don't mean the end of civilization, but I think we're at the beginning of the end of the system as we know it, because it just isn't working.
Well, especially when we have judges that say they no longer believe in punishment. Just before I let you go, Wendy, did you catch O'Reilly on the Letterman show?
You know, I did see replay of it. yeah. That was, you know, they like each other.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a testament, I'll tell you. O'Reilly and I, as much as I agree with him almost always on these issues around child sex abuse, I've had to set him straight a few times. I'm sure he would disagree with that characterization, but I disagree with him about a lot of issues.
Right.
And I think it's to his credit that he parts company with the quote-unquote party line,
yep,
as do I. I mean, people have called me liberal, conservative,
yeah,
radical, as they've done with him. And I think that's one of the reasons we get along, is that we're not in anyone's camp necessarily, and we're both very tough on crime.
Yep.
And we try really hard to at least be open-minded about the other side's position, But neither of us is apolitical. You know, I think the fact that he and Letterman can be in the same room is a testament to his character and the fact that he has great spirit about his job. He understands that it's partly entertainment, if not largely entertainment.
Yep.
You know, he's very good at what he does, and that's why he has the best audience on Fox News. And I really hope that your listeners will continue to tune in and send emails and let him know that they appreciate his position.
Absolutely. And the best way to describe you, Wendy, is a great guest, and I hope you and O'Reilly are all over this Cashman like a bird on a bug.
Well, you just tune in and let us know what to think.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it, and hopefully I can have you on again sometime.
You bet.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wendy Murphy, Fox News contributor, all-around good gal, and tune in to the O'Reilly Factor, maybe even tomorrow, it sounds like, if you want to see Wendy and see what they're talking about. Mandatory minimum sentences for child sex offenders? Absolutely. 60 days for somebody who abuses a child because the judge no longer believes in punishment? Okay? I'm curious what you think. Give me a call, 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. Do you think this Judge Cashman, Judge Edward Cashman, should be held, have his feet held to the fire here? Have him answer for this sentence? 60 days in jail to a guy by the name of Mark Hewlett. Hewlett admitted to raping a little girl countless times when she was between 7 and 10 years of age. And this judge gives a 60-day sentence because he says he no longer believes in punishment. And I think Wendy Murphy said it best. The criminal justice system, the way that it is today, needs a total reworking. Okay? Needs a total reworking from the top down. Because if you get judges that are now saying that they no longer believe in punishment, then there's something wrong. 25 years on the bench this judge was, and he says now he no longer believes in punishment. So there's a problem. There's a big problem. What do you think? I know this isn't a toll-free line, but call in. I won't keep you on long. 306-842-7884. Call in quick. We'll take your call. Do you think that this judge made the right decision? Yes or no? 306-842-7884. If we don't get any calls, then we'll go to old-time radio at the top of the hour. I'm not sure what we're going to air yet, but you are listening to Sunday Night Satellite. I'm going to just take a quick break, and I'm thinking, I'm wondering if the problem with getting Mark Lunsford on the air tonight was the damn time zone problem. I know the last time I interviewed him, we were all mixed up as to when actually I was going to be doing the interview. So let me try once again. We'll take a break, and we'll be back in a minute here on C-Band Talk and Sunday Night Satellite. I'm glad you're with me.
How you doing out there? You ever seem to have one of those days where it just seems like everybody's getting on your case, from your teacher all the way down to your best girlfriend? Well, you know, I used to have them just about all the time, but I found a way to get out of it. Let me tell you about it. Sitting in the classroom, thinking it's a track. Listen to the teacher laugh, just ain't my bag. New bells ring, you know that's my cue. I'm gonna meet the boys on floor number two. Smoking in the boys' room. Smoking in the boys' room. Nah, teacher, don't you feel me? Up with your rules. For everybody knows that smoking ain't allowed in school.
Brownsville Station. How many of you remember that song when it first came out? My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Sunday Night Satellite. I want to thank Wendy Murphy from Fox News and wherever else you can see Wendy. She's a law professor, Fox News analyst, and she's been working with Bill O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor to try and investigate and tell you who and what states and provinces, whatever, are looking at mandatory minimum sentences for child sex offenders. Make sure and check out Wendy on the O'Reilly Factor. Sounds like even tomorrow night, and maybe they'll be talking about this Cashman character that her and I were talking about tonight. I do apologize that I tried again to get Mark on the phone. He is a busy guy. We had agreed on and him coming on this evening, but I just can't get through on his phone. So we'll get Mark on again real soon. Next week on Sunday Night Satellite, we will have the chief executive officer of a new satellite service that's on called the iMusic Network, a new video music video service called the iMusic Network. They'll be with me here next week on Sunday Night Satellite to talk about that service. Now, it is available on DigiCypher, and I'm not sure what their plans are as far as opening it up to cable systems and other satellite venues. They're brand new, and I like to give services like that any kind of PR that I can give. Okay, if you want to sneak in a phone call between now and the end of the show, we've got about 8 minutes or so. You can call 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. What did you think about Wendy Murphy's comments about the judicial system, the way that it is now? Now, she picked up on my comment. I said, it's the best system that we have right now, and she kind of jumped on me for that because there are a lot of flaws with the system, okay? And yeah, that's true. And is it the soft judges? Is it the soft prosecutors? Should a prosecutor be making a deal or agreeing to a deal for 60 days for a child sex offender? That's just plain and simple wrong. And the prosecutor did say that he thought, or she thought, it doesn't say if it's a he or she, that an 8-year sentence would have been more appropriate. Well, 8 years is better than 60 days, but a mandatory minimum sentence for anybody that abuses a child under the age of 12 should be a no-brainer, because that's just the way things go. Now, I've had some emails, some comments sent to me about Primetime 24 and what their plans are. And the last I talked to Mike Fitzgerald from Primetime 24 is that they're looking at a first quarter switchover in 2006. A first quarter switchover in 2006, maybe April 1st, end of March, something like that. And then they will continue their services, ABC, NBC, CBS, via DigiCypher, and it will be available to the backyard dish owner. Okay. Now, as far as a Fox affiliate, I can't answer that question. The last that I talked to Mike is that the contractual process was around 80 to 85% done, that the switchover would happen again after the first quarter, or during the first quarter, around the end of March or so, and that the channels would be available in a DigiCypher format to the backyard dish owner. And I suppose the best way for you to find that out is to continue listening to this program or to check out your programming provider at satellite receivers, NPS, or wherever. If you'd like to email the show, my show email address is dpretzer, dpretzer at yahoo.com, dpretzer@yahoo.com, or you can check out the webpage by going to www.cbandtalk.com. That's www.cbandtalk.com. And you can check out all the links there. You can email right from that page. I want to thank the people at the On Computers Radio Show for helping out with some Windows Media Player audio streams. Keith at the W7DXX webpage with a IceCast MP3 stream, and then we have one other stream that I host here, so there's lots of different ways for you to listen on the internet. Of course, satellite is AMC3, transponder 5, 6.8 narrowband, W3956 on the 40 TV receiver. We're also on cable in Alabama, and anyone that wants to pick up and carry the show has my blessing. Just send me an email, let me know where you're airing it, and I can give you credit as credit is due. So I'll take another quick break, and we'll come back, and it will be an episode of Dragnet here on C-Band Talk.
You must remember this, a kiss is just a kiss, a sign is just a sign. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. I love you, on that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight, in particular my guest Wendy Murphy, Fox News analyst and law professor, for dropping by the show to talk about mandatory minimum sentences. I apologize that I wasn't able to get a hold of Mark Lunsford tonight. There was a phone problem or something, I don't know what it was, but that happens, and we'll have Mark on again real soon. This has been Sunday Night Satellite for January 8th, 2006. I want you to stay tuned to this channel for Dragnet from the 17th of June, 1949, The Waitress.
Want to hear news, weather, and sports? Well, sorry, not here. This is C-Band.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. There's a potential killer on the loose in your city. 18 women have been beaten and robbed by this man. The newspapers call him the werewolf. Your job is to get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime.
Investigated and solved by the men
who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family,
and your life.
For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step
on the side of the law through an actual case
from the official police files from beginning to end, from crime to punishment.
Dragnet is the story of your police force
in action.
It was Thursday morning, February 2nd. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were working the early morning watch at a robbery detail. Detectives in Los Angeles work in pairs. My partner's Ben Romero. He's a sergeant, and so am I. My name's Friday. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. I was on the way back from the teletype room, and it was 3 a.m. when I got to room 27A.
Hello, Leighton Prince.
Robbery detail. Hi, Ben. What's up?
Keep the coat on, Joe. Just had a hot shot call.
Coming, Skipper.
Right behind you.
Didn't hear you coming. Well, what was it, Ed?
Another woman robbed, almost beaten to death.
Well, how many does that make?
About 18 in 6 weeks.
Is that right, Skipper?
Yeah, 18 too many. Come on down these stairs to the garage.
Yeah. What about that suspect we had, Ed?
You mean Martin?
Yeah.
Had a release him this morning. But I got a good tail on him, Henderson.
Yeah. We got any reports yet?
Nothing definite to hold him for. Here's the garage. Let's hustle.
Right. Then if this isn't Martin's job, Skipper, and he's not the right man...
Then we start all over again, and we work night and day till we find the right man. Here's the car. Let's go.
Then you drive. How do the victims describe this guy, Ed?
Pretty sketchy. Supposed to be tall, dark, long black hair. Last woman said he had a face like an animal. Something like a dog. Or a wolf.
A wolf?
Yeah. She said, something like a werewolf.
Something like a werewolf. We almost had to be that, judging from the way he operated. He was either an animal or a raving maniac. One thing we were sure of, he was smart and he was dangerous. For almost 2 months, he prowled the streets in a stolen car in the early morning, usually between 3 and 5 a.m., and the victims were always lone women, most of them waitresses, coming to work or going home. He dragged them into the car, robbed them, beat them until they were unconscious, and then threw the body out into the street. That's just what we found when we pulled up to the curb near the corner of 8th and Grand. One cruiser car was already there, and so was the ambulance. About a dozen people were standing around looking at the crumpled figure of a woman sprawled out on the sidewalk. Two officers were talking to the only witness, a thin, sallow-faced newsboy. His story didn't give us much to go on.
Like I was telling these cops,
sir, more of these officers, sir.
I was walking up 8th Street on my way home as usual when I see this blue Chevy sedan pull up down the block there a little way and dump out the dame's body. Actually, I don't know what to think.
Did you get a look at the license plate?
Well, no, I didn't. Tell you the truth, I could hardly keep from... Well, I was just plain scared.
Mm. What did you do after you saw him throw the body out, son?
Well, I just stood there for a minute, and the fellow in the car drove right on past me.
Did you get a look at him?
I sure did.
How close were you when he drove past?
Well, it couldn't have been more than, 8 or 10 feet away. I was right over there by the street light near the curb.
Would you know this man if you saw him again?
I don't know about his height or his build or his weight, but, mister, his face I'll never forget.
Why do you say that?
It was just like the paper says about him. Right here on the front page. Here, read it. See? Woman's attacker looked like werewolf.
That's all the newsboy could tell us. The suspect drove a blue sedan. He had a face like a werewolf. We covered the neighborhood for clues, and we questioned a dozen people, but we got nowhere. We took the witness's name and address, and we drove down a couple of blocks to an all-night gas station.
14 hour,
I'm going in here and call the office and see if Henderson's called in on Martin.
We might still have a suspect.
Right, Skipper? Looks as mad as a wet hornet, doesn't it, Joe?
Yeah. Did you get a good look at that woman's face when they moved her in the ambulance?
Yeah. Sure does like to mess them up.
Oh, I don't know how we're going to get them, Ben, but we better do it fast. Next time, it'll probably be murder.
Oh, here comes the Skipper, Joe. Uh-oh. Doesn't look good.
What is it, Ed?
Just talked to Henderson. He tailed Martin to a bar in Long Beach. He hasn't been out of his sight for 2 minutes since yesterday. Martin's clear.
And we're right back where we started.
Yeah, with one more half-dead woman in the hospital.
Well, how about that stolen car, Skip?
Wait a minute. Get that radio up.
Okay. Code 3, ambulance dispatched. Code? Attention, all units. On Grand Avenue between Venice and Washington, a woman, victim of robbery and attack. Code 3, ambulance to task.
Code 3, red light and siren. Come on, Friday, let's roll.
We couldn't be sure, but it sounded like another one. 6 minutes later, we were there. Same story. Werewolf. The next day, the chief ordered the number of cruiser cars doubled in the Central District. This was for the early morning watch, with plainclothesmen to back them up. Then the newspapers played it big, and in 2 days, the story was on the front page of every paper in town. Maybe that should have made the werewolf lay low, but it didn't. Because at 4 o'clock that morning, while Ben and I were patrolling with the other cars, he got his 20th victim.
Attention, all units. Whittier between Soto and Matthews. A woman, victim of 211, an attack. Code 3, ambulance dispatched.
Here's a report on that blue sedan he used the other night, Joe. Found it out on Anaheim Telegraph Road.
Any luck with it?
Not one fingerprint we can use.
Anything else?
Nothing.
Well, how about the auto theft detail?
Same old story, Joe. He steals a car, uses it once, and then drops it. Never leaves a thing behind.
Well, that's great. We're sure moving fast.
How about that big guy you picked out of the lineup this morning?
Oh, I checked his alibi. It's perfect.
Now we haven't got even half a clue.
Yeah. Well, come on. Let's check with Ed. He's instructing the police women on a plan for tonight.
All right. Now you've heard the report, you understand how the suspect operates and what you're to do. Remember, all of you forget you were ever policewomen. Change the way you walk, the way you carry yourselves. That's the part you're playing, all right?
Okay.
And be careful and don't take any chances. All right, Freddy.
Okay, Ed. Now, just to make sure you look the part, we're spotting each one of you at different restaurants and coffee shops throughout the Central District. And from 7 o'clock tonight until daylight tomorrow, each one of you is going to be a waitress. You got that?
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, you want to give them their assignments?
Okay, Joe. Well, here's the way it lines up. Marge Kissel at the Top Hat Cafe. That's on 9th Street between Alvarado and Westlake.
Okay.
And Katie Wilkes, Joe's Coffee House, Brooklyn Soto.
Right.
Pat Fielding at the All-Night Steakhouse on Figueroa Street between Florence.
No, the trick of using decoys to lure criminals into a trap wasn't exactly new, but, well, it was just one of the old tricks that we figured might land the werewolf behind bars. At 7 that night, Ben and I made the rounds and found each of the policewomen on her job as a waitress. Well, the overall plan was simple. The girls were to leave the different restaurants between 3 and 5 a.m. that morning and pretend they were walking home. We mapped different courses for each one of them to throw out as much bait as possible and yet not to make it look suspicious. Each policewoman, from the time she left the restaurant and stepped out into the deserted streets, would be pretty much on her own. We had officers planted all along the way at designated intervals, but a big element of chance and danger was still there. All we could do was cross our fingers and hope.
How much more time, Joe?
Let me see. She's doing 2 minutes.
Yeah. Waiting gets on your nerves.
And it won't be long.
And this corner doorway's a pretty good lookout for her.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Listen.
Who is it, Joe? Can you see?
Get back.
What is it?
Wait a minute. It's Marge Kissel. There's a man following her, a big guy.
If it's the werewolf, where's his car?
I don't know. Maybe he changed his plans. Get back. Here they come.
You get a look at him, Joe?
Oh, pretty good. Not too suspicious. Might be coincidence.
Well, I got a pretty good lead. Come on, let's go.
Stay back in the shadows.
Hey, Joe.
Hmm?
So where'd the guy go to? I lost him.
The little coffee shop up in the next corner, see? Take a look.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's opening the door. He's turning on the light. Yeah.
Looks like a false alarm, Joe.
Well, let's check him anyway. Well, I didn't think we'd be that lucky on the first try, and we weren't. We asked the man a few questions, and it didn't take him long to show us he wasn't our man. He owned the coffee shop. So, Ben and I went back and took up our posts again and waited for the next decoy. We covered that 10-block course 6 times that morning, back and forth, following the bait, but it was almost as if the guy could sense a trap. Not once did we get a nibble. By the time our last decoy finished the route, it was almost daylight.
Joe, I never was so glad to see that sun come up in my whole life. My feet feel like they're puffing right up out of my shoes.
Yeah, me too. Come on, let's get over to the car and check on the other squad out in Boyle Heights. Oh, hit the radio, will you, Ben?
Yeah. Joe, there must be some easier job on the force than this.
Yeah, you and me both. Now, let's see what happened to the others, huh? 80K to unit 104K, come in.
104K to unit 80K, go ahead.
104K, this is Friday. You do any good out there?
This is Miller, I'll call Curtis. Stand by.
80K to 104K, Roger.
What do you think, Joe? Maybe a buy?
I don't know. Well, this guy seems to work like a mind reader. Well, he can't win all of them.
104K to unit 80K. This is Curtis. Go ahead.
This is Friday, Al. How'd you do out there? Any luck?
Just checked in the last gal, Joe. Katie Welch, not a sign.
Okay, Al. Have the men check in. 80K clear. KGPL. Okay, let's go, Ben. When we finally got back to the office that morning, both Ben and I were ready for some sleep, but it didn't look like we were going to get it. We just about finished going through the overnight reports for some kind of a lead when the phone rang. Robbery Friday.
Hi, Joe. This is Wilkerson, all of that.
Hi, Wilkie. You got something for us?
Not much, Joe, but it might work into something. Just got a report in on a pair of stolen license plates.
Oh?
Yeah. I'm not much of a hawk, Shaw, but I figure there's just a chance it might be your werewolf boy.
How come?
I don't know. Maybe just a hunch. After 13 years in this business, you get to know thieves pretty well. Sometimes you got to even think like them.
Okay, Wilkie, thanks. We'll check by in a couple of minutes.
Right, Joe.
What do you have to say?
A pair of license plates stolen last night. Wilkie's got a hunch it could have been our man.
Well, it might be an angle, Joe. If that werewolf guy'd hang on to one car long enough, we'd have a chance at him.
Well, he's too smart for that.
I don't know, Joe. Sooner or later, he's going to make a mistake.
Yeah. Come on, let's check with Wilkie. Well, we checked with Wilkerson. We got the best piece of news we'd had in days. On the average, 95% of stolen cars are recovered or located within 24 hours. In the remaining 5%, Wilkerson, by a simple process of elimination, narrowed down the number of cars the suspect might be driving. Wilkie figured 6 cars.
There they are. Now, I'll bet you if you picked up your man tonight, he'd be in one of these cars.
Let me see, huh? 2-door black sedan, yellow convertible, another sedan, green, blue coupe, black coupe, and a gray convertible. Well, that's good work, Wilkie. At least we got something to look for now.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. Wilkie, you got the numbers of those stolen plates you're talking about?
Yeah, right here, Ben. They're already on the hot sheet.
Good. Keep us posted, huh?
As usual, Ben.
See you later, Wilkie.
That's a good break, Ben. Something to keep us busy tonight.
Tonight? What do you mean?
We're setting another trap. Same thing as last night. Same police women, same everything.
Well, only this time, let's hope he steps into it. You know, Joe, this werewolf character's getting me mad.
That night, we followed in our own footsteps. We planted the police women decoys in 3 separate districts, and a few minutes before 3 a.m., our squad of men took up their positions. The same police women went to their waitress jobs in the same restaurants, and Ben and I and the rest of the men stood in darkened doorways or empty filling stations or whatever cover we could find. And we waited and waited.
What time is it, Joe?
Let me look. 4:30.
Thank you. Any sign, Joe?
No, nothing yet. Come on, stay in the shadows. That's the way it went all through the early morning. The same plan over and over again until daylight. Ben and I had check in at the station, go over the late stolen car reports with Wilkie, catch a few hours sleep at home, and then come back and do it all over again. The next night, the next morning, and the night after that, and the morning after that. 5 days later, Ben and I were ready to call it quits.
I'll admit it, Joe, I can't figure. The guy's either psychic or else he can smell a cop a mile away.
Yeah, well, at least we got that stolen car angle left. You check with Wilkie yet this morning?
I'll give him a call now.
All right.
This is Ben, Wilkie. You got anything for us this morning?
Yeah, I was just going to call you. You fellas ought to let me solve your cases for you.
Why? What'd you get?
The boys picked up 3 of those 6 stolen cars since late yesterday.
Great. Now, what does that leave us with?
Well, here are the 3 still missing.
Yeah.
4 X-ray 763.
Yeah.
5-6 Young, 342.
Uh-huh.
6-1 Robert, 385.
Yeah.
Got those?
Yeah, thank you, Wilkie. Check you later.
Good news?
Remember those 6 missing cars?
Yeah.
Wilkie says the boys found 3 of them since late yesterday. Here's what's still out. The blue coupe, the yellow convertible, and the gray convertible.
Yeah. Well, this feels like the right track for a change, Ben.
Righty. Romero, got a minute?
Sure thing, Skipper. Come on, Joe.
What do you got, Ed?
Woman up in Hollywood just called in with this. She said she walked down to the corner from her house last night to mail the letter. On the way back, a guy pulled up in the car and tried to drag her inside.
Any description?
Big, heavy set, dark, same thing.
Well, how'd you get away from him, Skipper?
She said she started running as soon as he made a motion toward her. When he saw her run up the steps of her house, he jumped back in the car and took off.
Well, how come she didn't call in before then?
She hasn't got a phone. She's ready to leave the house again this morning.
Sounds good, Chief. You got her address there?
Yeah, yeah. Mrs. Tom Burdick, 1237 Wilcox. Apartment 10.
Come on, Ben. This might be what we're looking for.
Who is it? Who's there?
Sergeant Friday, ma'am. Police.
Oh, just a moment.
I'm Sergeant Romero, Miss Birdie. This is my partner, Sergeant Friday. We come out to check on your call about that little trouble last night.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm going to be much help to you. I was so frightened about all I could do was just run.
Well, could you add anything to the man's description, Miss Burdick? I mean, other than what you told the chief on the phone?
Well, now, honestly, I don't think I can. All I saw was this tall, dark man jumping out of his car and starting for me. He had a heavy build and seemed to me, well, a large head. Lots of long black hair.
Uh-huh. Miss Burdick, would you recognize this man if you ever saw him again?
Well, I think I might. He was such an unusually big man, almost frightened me to death.
Well, just one more question, Miss Burdick. Could you describe the car this man was driving when he approached you?
His car?
Mm-hmm.
Why, yes. It was a gray convertible.
Miss Burdick, are you sure of that?
Yes, I'm sure of it. A gray convertible.
Thank you, Miss Burdick. That's all we wanted to know. Sometimes when you're on a case, you can chase yourself around in circles for weeks trying to fit together just 2 little pieces of a yard-long jigsaw puzzle. And a lot of the time, you find the answer where you least expect it. But once you get that feeling you're after the right man in the right way, there's nothing that can shake you. When Ben and I got back to headquarters, we went straight to the chief's office with the story, and we had him stake out the gray convertible. In other words, if any detective or officer spotted the car, he reported it back to us, but he stayed away from it. We figured that there probably weren't more than 2 of the victims who could take the witness stand and identify the man who robbed and beat them. Not with a smart defense lawyer, anyway. So there was only one way to catch this suspect. Red-handed.
Here they are, Joe. Both sets of license numbers for that gray convertible. Here are the original, and here are the numbers on the stolen plate.
Good. Everybody got a hot sheet?
From the chief all the way down to the janitor.
Fine. Now let's get together with Ed, huh?
Hot shot, Joe. Grab it.
I got it.
On the corner of California and Oakwood, a woman badly beaten. On the corner of California and Oakwood, a woman badly...
Come on, Ben, another one.
But, Joe, it's broad daylight.
Yeah. Doesn't figure, does it? Come on.
Vacant lot over here, Joe.
2 plain clothesmen and uniformed officers were keeping the crowd back. An ambulance was drawn up by the curb, but it was empty. When we got down to the rear of the lot, we found out why. They were waiting for the coroner. The woman was young, not much more than 30. Her body was half sprawled across the muddy ground, and her face was turned upward. It had been badly beaten.
You figured it happened last night, Sergeant.
Have the fingerprint men been notified?
Yeah.
How about the crime lab?
Just called them.
That's good. Now, let's keep everybody out of the area till they get here.
All right, Sergeant.
Who found the body?
One of the kids in the neighborhood. Owen was dead when he found her.
Did she live around here?
Well, about a half mile away. I hear she's got three kids. Or, she had three kids.
You seen enough, Ben?
Well, let's get on back to headquarters.
All the way back to headquarters, Ben and I planned our next move. And by the time we got to Ed Backstrand's office, we knew exactly what had to be done. When we told him about the werewolf murder, he didn't say a thing for a minute. He just stared across the room at the calendar on the wall. Then he brought his hand down hard against the desk.
Friday, Romero, I'm only going to say this once, so get it straight. That guy's pulled his last job in this city. He's through robbing and beating women, and he's through with murder. I've given you time to track him down, and now I want him in. No stalls, no excuses, I want him. I don't care how many men you use, and I don't care how you get him, but get him. That's all.
Ben and I worked all that afternoon right through dinner, up until 8 o'clock. By that time, the overall plan was down on paper and already in action. It was one of the biggest things we'd ever tackled, and, well, we didn't know if it was going to work. We only knew it had to work. We had a squad of 65 cars to stretch out over 40 square miles of the city in one big dragnet. The blockade itself would be stationary most of the time, and working inside it would be two cars, 14 policewomen as decoys, with two plainclothesmen assigned to watch each policewoman. If and when the werewolf was sighted in the gray convertible, we'd automatically take over the police radio for the whole city, and Backstrand would direct the chase from headquarters. A little after 8, we had coffee and hamburgers, and we went to Ben's for a few hours. Ben tucked his kid in bed as usual, and then he laid down for a nap. I talked to his wife until I dozed off in the chair. At 11:30, she woke us up. I combed my hair and put on my coat. Cops' wives are like everybody else's. They worry. When we met Ed at headquarters, we did some last-minute checking on details with Backstrand for about a half an hour, and then we were all ready to go. By 2:05, half the dragnet crew pulled out of the police garage and scattered over the city to their places. By 2:35, the other half pulled out, and a few minutes later, Ben and I followed. At 3:03 that morning, Backstrand took over communications and checked every car in the operation. It was a good start. Every man in his right place by the right time. The trap was set. All we needed now was to find our suspect, the werewolf, inside.
Control 4 to Unit 80K. Control 4 to Unit 80K.
80K to Control 4. Go ahead.
This is Backstrand standing by.
80K. Roger. Clear. KGPL. Okay, Ben. Now let's go find him.
I got a hunch, Joe. Let's try the Wilshire district first.
Sounds all right to me. Let's go. For the first hour and a half, we raked the Wilshire district back and forth. Not a sign. Then about 38 minutes past 4, we headed back for the downtown area and parked in an alley where we could double-check on one of our policewomen decoys.
Here comes one of the girls now, Joe. Pat Field. Bet her feet are almost as tarred as mine.
Yeah. To see anything else, Ben?
Nothing. Quiet as a church. No, wait a minute.
Hmm?
Car just turned the corner. Heading up in the same direction she is. Joe.
Hmm?
Joe, it's slowing down. Wait a minute. It's pulling up beside her. It's a gray convertible. It's him, Joe. Come on.
Ben, get down. He sees us. He's got a gun. Yeah, look at that guy take off. 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4. We've spotted the suspect. He's driving a gray Ford convertible. License 61 Robert 385. Suspect's headed east on Olympic from Alameda. Driving without lights. Suspect is armed. He had a fast car and he knew how to drive it. We almost lost him twice. 2 minutes after we sighted him, Backstrand took over full radio control.
Control 4 to Unit 80K, your location.
80K to Control 4. We're traveling at a high rate of speed, headed east on Olympic, crossing Soto Street.
Control 4 to all units, stand by. Units 11A, 12, and 13R close in on the intersections at Olympic and Marina. Units 41, 42, 45, and 104K move on the next floor crossing to Unit N. To the north and south, units 105K, 14A, 17R, 43T. Block all main arteries.
Cars in the dragnet had pulled in like a noose around a 5-mile area. Ben and I hoped it was just a matter of time. Unit 80K to Control 4.
Control 4, 80K, go ahead.
He's headed north on Fresno Street, crossing Whittier Boulevard.
Attention all units. 80K now pursuing suspect north on Fresno from Whittier Boulevard. Units 50, 105K, 11R, 18A, block off the intersection on Fresno and Paul.
Hey, Ben, up there ahead, what's he trying to do now? Look, he's turning around.
Yeah, and he's coming right for us. Watch it, Joe, look out!
Pretty close. 80K to Control 4.
Control 4, 80K, go ahead.
Exchanging shots with suspect. Watch it, Ben, here he comes again. That gun, doesn't he?
Sure does. Hey, Joe, look. Look, he's turning east. He's running for Hollenbeck Park.
Yeah, 80K to Control 4.
Control 4,
suspect just drove up over curb and into Hollenbeck Park.
Joe, can you get a shot at him?
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! I'll give up! Don't shoot!
Then step out in the open and get your hands in the air.
All right, I'll give up, but don't shoot!
You're a brave kid. Yeah, come on. All right, you get your hands in the air. Come on, higher.
Joe, look out, he's got a knife.
I got him.
Joe, those women were right. He does look like a werewolf.
Yeah. You got your handcuffs?
Yeah.
Okay. Got a cigarette?
I've been out for an hour. Middle place across the street. Maybe we can get some there.
Okay. There's the crew from the 41R. Hey, fellas, take him into robbery, will you?
Okay, Friday.
Think there's a vending machine in there.
Uh-huh. Say, you got some change for the cigarette machine, mister?
I think so. Say, who's that guy all them cops were after over in the park a little while ago?
I picked up the werewolf. Been reading the paper?
Yeah. You fellas cops?
Yeah.
Sure made it easy for you, didn't he? All you cops had to do was surround the little fella in the park. Nothing to it, huh?
Yeah, that's right, mister. Nothing to it.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Walter Barton, known as the Werewolf, was tried and convicted and is now serving a full life sentence at the state penitentiary. This has been Dragnet, the third in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the office of C.B. Horrell, Chief of Police, Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Sergeant Mario Victor Dyro of the Los Angeles Police Department, who on the morning of January 1st, 1943, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Want to hear news, weather, and sports? Well, sorry, not yet. This is C-Band.